This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I am all about breaking narratives, particularly fake news. And we were just talking a moment ago about you being to South Africa. It wasn't quite what you expected. You are in China, and this is a great conversation starter because the entire West has this complete and utter fabricated illustration, a caricature, if you will, of China. Let's start quickly with you. Who are you, and why are you in China?
Okay, so I'm now a full-time content creator here in China. But through my life, I've had various different things. I've always been involved in business in one way or another. And the thing that first brought me here, I was producing in the UK bean bags. And I was getting those empty bean bags made in China and then exported to the UK, filling them with the beans, the polystyrene beads, and selling them. And I was at that time using a kind of agent. He was a British guy married to a Chinese woman. He set up the deal with a factory, and I was buying through him. And then one summer, he invited me to come out to see the factory. And I took him up on that offer, and that was 20 years ago. And I landed in Shanghai, and I was like, wow, this is like not what I expected. You know, it was a very modern city, lots of Western brands. And then I kind of fell in love with China. And at that time, I hadn't seen that much. It was my main experience was in Shanghai. But I kept coming back, and over the next couple of years, I was coming back more and more. And then for about 13 years, I spent probably more than half my time in China and back forwards to the UK like four or five times a year. And I then, about 14 years ago, I got divorced with my British wife. I was still committed to China. And then sort of 6 or 7 years ago, I met a Chinese woman who I'm now married to. So about 7 years ago, I moved here permanently. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah, and so I stumbled across your videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Now, the great thing is that you are a Westerner living in China. And you were just telling me before we started recording that you've also been to South Africa. And when you came here, it also wasn't what you expected.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and I think this is obviously down to the media. So. For me, I'm 58 years old, but when I was growing up, all the images I ever remember about South Africa in my head from what I saw on the TV was about violence and fighting and trouble. And that was kind of similar with China. So as I'm growing up, the images I have etched in my head of China are like very poor people wearing the grey clothes, riding bicycles around Beijing, holding their little
communists.
Books, you know. Yeah, absolutely. And again, when I came to, I knew before I arrived in China it wasn't still like that because I'd done some other research, but I was still quite shocked into how modern the city of Shanghai was. Now, Shanghai is one of the most modern cities here. But I was still pretty shocked at, like, the thing that probably shocked me the most was the amount of Western brands operating here at that time. You know, I didn't expect to see any Western brands, and yet there's quite a lot, even at that time, 20 years ago.
You and I are recording with a direct link. There's no VPN on your side. There's no VPN on my side. We are using a straight connection like I would with any other country.
Correct. Yeah. I don't have my VPN switched on at all.
Whoa, what are the anti-China propagandists going to do now?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it? It's funny.
Okay, so, I mean, look, you said Shanghai is one of the most modern cities in China. I would argue that it's one of the most modern cities in the world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it really is. Like, so the major cities here, the Shenzhen where I live, which is kind of the tech city, You then have Beijing, which is the political center. You have Shanghai, the financial center. You have Guangzhou, and you have Hangzhou. And then there's other up-and-coming cities like Chongqing and some of these other cities are, you know, approaching what they call tier one status. But I've traveled extensively around China. I've been to many what they call like third tier cities. And I see a lot of those are better than a lot of cities when I go back to the UK, you know. And it's just kind of here. Of course, there's parts of China which are not as flashy and nice. And that's like anywhere you go, you know. I can, you know, for every nice place I can show you in the UK, I can show you a not so nice place. And of course, there are not so nice places here. I don't tend to push those because a lot of other people do that, you know. I tend to be a kind of positive person. I want to show positive things, and there's a massive amount of positive things to show in China. But their cities are just mind-bogglingly modern. The infrastructure is amazing. The transport, the public transport, is like hands down some of the best I've ever used anywhere in the world.
But just to balance that out, you know, me living in South Africa, one of the things that I like about this country is the open space, the countryside. China obviously has that too.
We have a huge amount of it. And actually, even within the city, so Shenzhen is a city, I don't know, it's about 20 million people, a very, very large city. But there's some really cool, like, green spaces within that city. And actually, even when you visit new cities in China, one of the sort of central, like, policies is that they create really good green spaces. So in Shenzhen, we have these, like, huge parks where you can like hike and stuff. And these are massive parks. They're not like a bit of grass with a few playthings for kids. These are like huge, you know, square kilometers big. And then you go into the sort of more rural areas. Like I've just come back from Yunnan, and that was just some of the most spectacular scenery I've ever seen, you know. And in fact, the video is not up on YouTube yet, but it will be soon. And I was at this one place, and literally, I would have never believed I was in China. It was literally like a Caribbean beach. You know, it's just unbelievable some of the places they have here.
I've done a number of podcast episodes about China, and consequently, or subsequently, I have been accused of being a Chinese shill or a Chinese grifter, as you expect, right? You can't say anything positive about China because then you're pro-communist or you work for the CCP or whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously not true. It is possible. It is possible to see lots of good about China, right?
Of course. I mean, there is a lot of good. And, I recently made a post on X saying, you know, why I'm a British citizen, why I chose to live in China. And they got about 400,000 views. And it was very interesting reading the comments on there because, like you say, you get these people who go, oh, you're just a, you know, CPC shill, blah, 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 blah. But the reason I live here, compared to the UK, I can have a much better standard of living here. So let me just take one example, electricity. It's 20% here of what it costs in the UK. So if my electric bill in the UK is £100, it costs me £20 here for that same amount of electricity. Now, the reason that is, and this goes on with a lot of these like utility services, the Chinese government control those kind of services. They're state owned, but they're not there to make money. They're there to provide a service to the people. And that's the same with the transport here, like the high speed trains, the metro systems. Their fundamental goal is not to make money. It's to provide a service to the people. Whereas if I look at the UK, all of those services have been privatized and the companies that run them are foremost to make money. So this is a massive difference. And also here, you will have like large corporations that can, and they make a lot of money, like your Alibabas, your Tencents, your Huawei's, but they're encouraged by the government to set up like social sort of funds and social programs. So what you'll have here, you'll have like Huawei. They will build 500 houses. They will build a school. They will build. And it's not that the people in those companies are not allowed to make money. They do make money, and the CEOs are paid very well, and the senior executives are paid very well. But what the Chinese government are basically saying, look, we give you the sort of environment to become successful. So you need to give back to the community. You know, in England, this corporation will do the bare minimum for the society. You know, it'll be a peanuts. But here, they're kind of encouraged to do a lot more for social. And that means that you can have a lot of people living in sort of much cheaper housing than they would normally be able to get, or they can send their kids to a better school than they would normally be able to send them to.
Yeah, but what you're talking about now is, I think, that foundational triggering issue. You're kind of alluding to a socialist system or a sort of proto-communist. How do you find that affects aspects like freedom and, of course, making money?
Yeah, I mean, from a point of view of making money, I think the Chinese government realized, I would describe it as a socialist capitalist hybrid system here. So you have the state-owned companies who tend to be the companies that are very, very important, like telecommunications, like banking. The state has a lot of ownership in them. But then you get private companies like so for an example, we've just had the world up in arms about DeepSeek. That's a completely private company. But the Chinese government here, they say, right, what are our like key industrial policies or key policies? So AI is a key policy. So what they will do with these private companies, they will give them like really good tax breaks and stuff like that. They will give them, they will sort of guide the state banks to give them funding at very good rates if they need it. You know, so maybe the interest rate's 5%, but they will steer the state-owned banks to borrow money to these, you know, key enterprises, private enterprises at very preferential rates. The government here will sell them land if they need to build offices and factories at very preferential rates. So they will like single out sort of industries which are important. And they will really support those industries. And I think that's something, personally, I think this is a good way of doing things, because they have the state side and they have the private side. Now, talking about freedoms, there is nothing I can't do here that I would do in the UK. So there's one kind of red line here that everybody knows about, and that is you can't sort of openly talk bad about government. So you can't like openly criticize the leadership, but there are ways that the Chinese people do that. So for example, in Beijing and some other provinces, if you are not happy with the way you've been treated by a government office, or you're not happy about something, you can ring this number called 12345. You ring this number and you lodge your complaint. And then that complaint has to be followed up. And normally they will get back to you with a resolution. But like, as far as like being abusive to the leaders, that's something you can't do. But when you talk to Chinese about this, they will say, well, what's the point in, say, swearing about our leader? What does it achieve? You know, because often when you argue with these anti-China people, they go, when you push them, so well, what do you mean there's no freedom? You go, oh, well, you can't criticize, you know, you can't call bad names to your leader. No, you can't. You will get into trouble for that here. However, the Chinese will go, but what does that achieve? You know, if we swear at our leader, where does that get us? And that's like sometimes how a lot of these Westerners define freedom, that you can. But there's things like right now in the UK, you can't sort of speak about the Palestine issue because you're bombarded with sort of hate, you know. But I can openly discuss that here in China. You know, there's no problem. And I don't know, I really struggle to find anything that I can't do here. This notion where Westerners think that, oh, the government follows everything you do and watches you, that's just nonsense. You know, they have 1.4 billion people here. There's no way they have the resources to watch everybody. And I would suggest it's probably very similar to other countries where if you're up to no good or you're doing something wrong, then they will probably keep a closer eye on you.
Mm.
But if you're just going about your daily life as a normal person, why would they need to be watching you, you know?
Mm. Speaking of that freedom of speech thing, so I know that you can't... I'm about to sneeze. Hold on. Okay, it went away. So you can't criticize the government, right? And also the Chinese government doesn't like protesting. Fine. However,
actually there is protests over here. I've seen numerous protests here, but they're much more controlled because the Chinese are very pragmatic. So for every problem they say, if we sit down and we talk, we can find a solution. They actually don't see protesting as like a solution to a problem. They would rather sit down, the two sides, and discuss the problem and come to a conclusion. And many, many times they do. But I've seen protests like not so long back, not far from where I am, saying not far, about 100 kilometers. They wanted to build a crematorium where they burn people, right? Like dead people. And the locals were just not happy with it. So they staged a protest and they finally turned over that decision to build that there. You know, it's and we do get protests here. Not like the West where there's lots of people out sort of throwing stones and kind of semi-rioting.
Yeah,
but there are protests here.
The point I was going to make, Lee, is every country has its form of censorship. So you choose your battles here. So in China, if you can't criticize the government, fine. In Europe, you can't question, you know, certain events of World War II. It's a criminal offense. Or
yes.
Or for example, during COVID, I couldn't criticize the vaccine rollout. Everything of mine was being censored and removed. How is that any different? You just have to choose. You have to choose what type of censorship you want.
Absolutely. I just want to clarify, when I say you can't criticize the government, it's more like the leaders. So the Chinese do have methods of criticizing policy. So what? And sometimes what happens here, if the government are thinking about bringing a new policy, they will sometimes float that idea in Chinese social media and they will gauge the opinion of the public. And another thing they will do, sometimes they will have a new policy and they'll roll that policy out in maybe one city or one province and they will see the effects of that policy. Then if they find it's working well, they will extend it to other areas. So one thing, and I think this is very, very important, you're probably aware that there was this whole issue with TikTok where the US were going to ban it. So all these Americans went to something called Xiao Hongshu, Little Red Book. Now, when this happened, personally, I thought that the Chinese authorities were going to shut this down. They were going to stop people registering on Xiao Hongshu, but they didn't. And all these Americans sort of saw that, oh, actually, China's not what we've been told. But as a consequence of this, there's now rumors circulating that the Chinese government are going to kind of relax the internet rules in Shanghai as a trial. So they might open up some of the websites in the West that were previously required a VPN. It's not fact yet, but there's a lot of rumors at the moment circulating. And it's like they recently opened up visa-free travel for lots of countries to China. And they started that with a 144-hour visa. And they tested it in a few areas. It worked well, so they rolled it out further. And now they've extended that to 240 hours. So many countries now can come for 10 days without a visa. So they often trial these policies and then expand them out. And again, I think that's something that works really well here.
Something that Westerners don't understand, and I must just clarify here. I don't know if I'm considered a Westerner or not because I live in Africa. I don't know. I suppose we're somewhat schizophrenic. We've got colonial history and we've got British Commonwealth history, but we're part of BRICS and we're friendly with China and we're friendly with you. So I guess it depends on which day, on how we're feeling, we're Western or not. But one thing I've noticed in the West is there's a very strong anti-China sentiment, and I suspect it's a result of the sort of Cold War overflow, and it just hasn't really gone away because of, I think, groups like the CIA and the media, and it's this constant fear, this communist fear that China is going to take over the whole world and become this totalitarian central authority and everybody's going to end up as slaves. I mean, as I talk to you right now, you know, are you oppressed?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think you're right there. I hear like certain politicians in the UK, they say, oh, we need to limit China because they'll affect our way of life. And again, like, how exactly? You know, it's just, I feel China are very much so unlike America, who like to try and change regimes in countries and overthrow governments. China, look, it's like, look, we don't really care what's happening in your country. We just want to do business with you. You know, it's like, you know, they're being criticized a lot at the moment because, oh, we're buying lots of energy from Russia and Iran. But China, look, it's like, look, Iran, what Iran do is Iran's business. If we can buy oil from them at a better rate than we can buy it from somewhere else, then that's fine by us. And I think actually that's kind of a good, you know, I just feel that certainly the UK and the US, they just want to always be interfering in everybody else's affairs, you know. And I think China don't do that, you know. But I do think, you know, it's like I really have no idea why the UK is so anti-Russian, for example. I understand to a point why they're anti-China, because you have this group of politicians, IPAC, and they're always just creating, you know, stories and nonsense about China, and then the media back that up. Literally every article I see in British media is like, always has a negative sort of lean to it. So people are fed this all the time. And an interesting story, my youngest son, Ollie, I've been visiting China for many, many years, and I always talk about it when I went back home. And then when my son was 21, he came to China for 3 years. And even he was still surprised, even though I talked about it so much, he says, because I was never sure whether to kind of believe you, because what I read in the media was opposite to what you were telling me, you know. But when he came here himself, he saw it and he's like, wow, it's completely different to what I expected.
Have you got a social credit score?
Ah, that's just Western nonsense. There's no such thing. So let me kind of explain. The only kind of credit score in here is credit scoring, which is the same as like almost every other country. So you want a bank loan, you want to borrow some money, you build up a credit score. But it's nothing to do with things you do socially. And then the other big difference, so like if in the UK you have a business and you get into trouble and you declare yourself bankrupt, right? You serve a period of 1 or 2 years and then everything goes pretty much back to normal. Whereas in China, it's slightly different. So if you get a court order in China because you haven't paid some money to somebody or you owe money to people, you go on like a kind of credit blacklist. And that blacklist stops you from doing certain things. It stops you from booking 5-star hotels or luxury hotels. It stops you from traveling on first class travel or business class travel. Because the way Chinese authorities look at it, if you owe people money, then you shouldn't be spending on luxury things. That's the only difference. This nonsense about, you know, oh, if you cross the road when you shouldn't, or if you, you know, you do this, you get points. It's just absolutely nonsense. I mean, the Chinese kind of laugh about it. It's just so ridiculous that, and I really don't know where this narrative comes from. I have no idea how it sort of gained so much traction in the West, but it's just laughable, really. It's just so funny.
It is funny because it's always China that is to blame for all the sort of totalitarianism, mass surveillance. You know, China's the worst. But then when it comes to technology, China's stealing everything from the West.
Of course, yeah. I mean, and again, it's not true, you know. An example I can give to that, and the one that a lot of Westerners bring up, is high-speed train technology. And when Deng Xiaoping went to Japan, he came back to China and says, right, we need high-speed trains in China. This is the future. So what they did, they put out government contracts, and these were tens of millions of dollars, you know. This is like 20, 30 years ago, big, big contracts. But in those contracts was written two really main things. One, that the trains had to be made in China to give Chinese people jobs. And second, that there needs to be a transfer of technology. And the companies who got involved were well aware of that. They signed those contracts doing that. So the trains were built here. Then what the Chinese engineers did, they looked at them and goes, right, okay, so this technology has been transferred to us. And they just improved and improved on that. And that's what they did with cars. Like, you want to come into the Chinese market, you need to do a joint venture with the Chinese company, you need to transfer technology. Now, that's not to say Chinese companies haven't hacked and stolen technology, you know, but so has the UK. So as America, so as Russia, you know, in today's technology, espionage is a game that all countries are playing, you know, because they all want to get a leg up on each other. But this notion that China said, you know, China have now developed a lot of stuff that other countries don't have. Like they developed 5G, they've developed, you know, lots of sort of techniques, you know, they're really pushing ahead now in semiconductor technology. Okay, they're still behind in some areas, but in other areas, they're in front, you know. So this notion that they're still technology, I think, and another really interesting statistic is each year, China graduates around seven times more engineers in like chemistry, physics, maths, engineering than like America. And more than the rest of the world combined. So they have this massive talent pool to pull from. And then you get companies like Huawei. They will employ the creme de la creme of those engineers, and they pay them extremely well. You know, so they've got some of the best talent in the world working for those tech companies here in China.
Someone sent me yet another one of these stories, and I'm going to bring it up with you. Apparently, you can't be a Christian in China.
Again, it's nonsense. I have a good friend, a lady friend in Shenzhen. She's a practicing Christian. She goes to church every Sunday. You know, there are many Christian churches. Now, where people get this idea that religion is not allowed in China, it's because what China have a problem with is people pushing their religion on other people. So you can't like go out in the street and preach your religion onto others. You have to keep it to yourself. You go to your church, you do your own thing. But as far as trying to convert others to your religion openly, that's kind of not allowed. So I don't know whether you know this, but there are 55 different minorities in China, in various provinces. And I was visiting a couple of them just about 2 weeks ago, the Hani and the Bulang. And they have their own cultures. They have their own kind of religions. You know, Buddhism is big here. There's Catholic churches here. There's Muslim mosques here. You know, and these people, as long as they don't try to force their religion onto other people, that's fine.
Yes, but Lee, we all know that the Chinese government is harvesting organs of Muslims in the West.
Again, nonsense. And if, actually, if you look behind, a number of years ago, I did a video about this because there was this sort of tribunal, fake tribunal held in the UK. And I looked into it, and it's all funded by Falun Gong.
Yes, you know, and the NED.
And the NED. Now, Falun Gong was outlawed in China because it was a cult masquerading as a religion, and there was they were really pressuring a lot of Chinese to become members. So this is what I'm actually atheist, but let's say if I was let's say if I was Catholic, and I went round trying to force other Chinese people to become Catholic. That would be a problem. But if I was a Catholic and I went to my Catholic church and I said my Catholic prayers and come back to my home, that's fine. No problem. But it's when you're forcing things onto us. But again, there was a thing many, many years ago. So one of the things in China, for certain crimes, you could still receive the death penalty. And many, many years ago, when some prisoners were sentenced to death and executed, they did then use some of those organs to donate to other people. But from what I understand, that stopped many, many years ago. But, you know, the way you hear some Westerners talk, it's like they snatch people off the street, extract the kidneys, take out the liver. Of course not. It's just nonsense, you know.
Yeah, you said at the beginning of our conversation that people actually should visit China, and that will change. For sure. That'll change their mind. I was recently in Hong Kong, and I guess you could argue if it's part of China or not. I think strictly speaking, it definitely is part of China.
It is, yeah, for sure.
It's definitely Chinese. And I was very pleasantly surprised. Okay, I wouldn't want to live there. I don't like the concrete jungle. But it is magnificent.
Well, actually, now I actually feel Hong Kong is a bit dated compared to like Chinese cities. And something very interesting. So before COVID, you would have many, because Shenzhen borders Hong Kong. So it's very easy if you live in Shenzhen to go to Hong Kong. It's literally 30 minutes. And before COVID, you had many mainlanders. They would go over to Hong Kong and shop because they thought it was a nicer city. But in the last 5 years, that's totally changed. Now, I can go to certain places in Shenzhen of a weekend, and I feel as though I'm in Hong Kong because you're just surrounded by Hong Kongers. You know, and they come over because they say it's cheaper here. The food's great here. You can buy stuff, electronic goods, really cheap. And so it's really changed.
You said food. Okay, so there's the segue that always comes up. Mm-hmm. Eating which dog is your favorite?
So, again, dog, I've never tried it. It is still available here, right? You're very hard pushed to find it in a city. But if you go to some more rural areas, you can find dog. But it's not like they're getting the sort of little Yorkshire Terrier and cutting it up. They breed a certain kind of dog. But actually, it's becoming less and less. You know, I've never seen a restaurant in Shenzhen or Shanghai or a big city that serves dog.
That you know of is what somebody would say.
I mean, that is true. But I think if I go back 20 years, there were food scandals, that the big people, you know, there was one big one I remember where they were selling like fox meat and they were colouring it as lamb. But they've really tightened up on that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe if you're in some sort of small rural area and you're buying from some, you know, dodgy street vendor, then you might have a problem. But like a lot of the sort of main stores and supermarkets, there's a lot of quality control now. You have like there's one company here called Herma, the supermarket, and everything has like on the blockchain, so you can like scan a QR code and you can see the origin and all this kind of thing. But so if you look at some sort of really old people in certain areas of China, they will still eat dog at certain times of year. But the thing I've noticed, like when I first come to China 20 years ago, not many people would have dogs and cats as pets. But now that is a massively booming industry. Mm. Like it's huge. So the perception is changing. So previous to that, the Chinese saw a dog as just another, you know, well, what's the difference between a dog and a sheep and a cow? Because they just saw it as another animal because they didn't have them as pets, you see, whereas the West have had them as pets.
But that's a good point. But that is a good point because people end up becoming, I guess, desensitized because they have certain animals as pets. It's about the domestication. But I mean, I go hunting, right? And you know, I hunt. So you know, I use a gun and I shoot animals, but I eat them. So many people will find that revolting. You know, it's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting here because if you go not so much in the city now, but if you go to rural areas, they have these like. I guess you could call it like a farmer's market where people are selling, you know, vegetables and meat. But the meat is very sort of like raw. So, you know, you want to buy a piece of lamb, they will drag a lamb onto the bench, you know, they will chop a bit off which you want, put it on the scales. And like I'll sometimes get comments in those videos like, oh, this is disgusting. I'll go, well, where do you think your meat comes from, you know? Mm-hmm. Like many Westerners think, oh, it's all nicely packaged on a supermarket shelf. That's how it's made. But the reality is that, you know, you slaughter an animal, you cut it up, you skin it, you know, that's the reality. And that still happens here in China. So there's areas I can go here and I want to buy a chicken and it's live in a cage and they will cut its throat. They will drain the blood. But that like freaks a lot of Westerners out, you know, but that's the reality of how chickens get to your table. You know, that's the bottom line.
I want to circle back, if you don't mind, to we were chatting earlier about the sort of socialist communist aspect, and I forgot to bring it up then, so I'm going to bring it up now because this is quite important. If you are in America, you are very much preoccupied by the theater of politics. It is just personality cult stuff. It's all about Trump or Kennedy or Elon Musk. It's all about the personalities. it's like a TV show. And I love the fact that
it's an entertainment show.
Yeah, and I love the fact that politics is very subdued in China. When I was in Hong Kong, nobody talks about the government. Nobody talks about politics. Yeah. They just get on with their lives. And on top of that, and this is the part that confuses so many people. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Chinese people culturally are very conservative. They love their own culture. They love family. They love community. They love sharing their food. You know, it's not all hyper individualistic, which is what the West has become.
That's very true. I mean, I've got a personal experience to count on. So a number of years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, which is super rare for guys, right?
Yeah.
And
I saw that.
Yeah, it was during COVID and I could have gone back to the UK because I still pay tax on some income I have in the UK. So I'm still a UK citizen. I could have gone there and had treatment completely free of charge on the National Health Service. But when I looked into it, it was going to take me a minimum of 3 months to get a consultation, whereas here it was done like in a day. And so I decided to have my treatment here. And something that really touched me, the amount of Chinese people who I didn't know that well, who gave money because they have something here that's called lucky money. And they gave me money. And I was just like, gobsmacked. But like, so say if my wife's friend's father is ill, we will give a red envelope. It's called a Hong Bao with money in. And I was really touched about that. And that's the sense of community here that, you know, they want to help somebody. And there's also times where, like, I've been kind of in the middle of nowhere doing a project at a place, and I've gone to get something to eat, and Chinese people have called me over to the table. I remember one time there's like three construction workers, 10 o'clock at night, they call me over, they share all their food with me, share their beer with me. Fantastic. They're very, very friendly, community sharing people. Absolutely. And
go on.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned about the government in like the West is a lot of theater. And that's another massive difference here. The politicians here are very professional. They take their job very, very seriously. And something that the West misunderstand is like, by the time politicians get to the higher level, like they're in Beijing in the central government sort of arena, they've probably worked in politics for 30 or 40 years. Most of those have started off by, you know, being in charge of a village, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people. Then they move up to a city, then a province. Then if they're good, they will get promoted to Beijing. So by the time they get to top level government, they're very experienced. And the other big thing here, which is completely different to the UK, if a politician here messes up, they're fired. They're out of a job, you know? Whereas in the West, it's like, oh, they do something wrong, they mess up. Oh, well, they probably get a promotion, you know? Mm. So there's this. And then I just tell you this other little story. So the Westerners will say, oh, there's no democracy in China. But actually there is. So I was visiting a fairly rural village about 2 weeks ago. And the group was, oh, well, we're going to meet the village leader. And there's me, because it's like a minority business. There's me expecting to see some guy in some like tribal gear with a spear or something, you know. And he says, oh, no, this is the guy. And he's like mid-30s, very trendy, young Chinese guy, right? So I says, this is the leader. He says, yeah, this is the village leader. So I said to, because I don't speak so much Chinese, I said to my wife, I says, can you kind of ask how he became the village leader? He says, oh, they have to vote for him. So he was up against another six or seven. And so there's 3,000 people in this village. And he presents his plans to these people, along with the other six or seven candidates. And all the villagers have a vote. So we want this guy. So he's then elected the village leader, and he becomes the like bridge between the local government and his village. So let's say then he will get promoted to a city level, then a province level. So he's actually been elected by the people, you know. So this nonsense that there's no democracy, again, is another false narrative, really.
Yeah, but I mean, Lee, I personally don't like democracy. Plato, in fact, didn't even like democracy. I don't think that people should be voting for 51%, you know, or 49% of the other population. I prefer the best people in charge, like a company.
Sure.
So personally, I'm okay with no voting. I mean, I live in Africa, and voting doesn't really get us anywhere.
Yeah. Well, actually, in the UK, you see, people think they have this democracy, but it's so skewed, the system is, that it'll be one of two parties that will always get in. It's very difficult for like a third party to break through. Yeah. And I just want to say, like, I honestly believe that China are where they are today because they have one party. That's because they're able to make long-term plans and goals. So if you look at the US or the UK, every 4 or 5 years, it's all changed. And all the policies are different. You know, Trump's now doing completely opposite to Biden. And sometimes they will do the opposite of the other party just to spite them. Whereas in China, they go, right, where do we want to be in 15 years? All right, we want to be here. So we need to do this, this, and this. You know, and as I said before, if politicians here mess up, they're out. And another thing is that not everything is controlled by the central government. The provincial governments here have a lot of like power. So Beijing, they will set the like international policy or the big policy. But like, I live in Shenzhen. Shenzhen have like a local government, big city, and they can make a lot of the decisions of what happens in Shenzhen. You know, they don't have to get the okay from the central government. So this thing where, you know, the Westerners think, oh, Xi Jinping makes every decision and whatever he says must be goes again, it's not the case, you know.
Something that often comes up also, though, is you can't own land. Now, I understand that there's a very weird type of property ownership thing going on in China where they talk about the physical land that's underneath your property, but you can own property.
Correct. So I don't fully understand this, but I'll explain how I understand it. So when you buy a property, the land has a 70-year lease. But actually, we're at a point where nobody's actually got to the end of that 70 years yet. But what I hear and the way they will deal with it, they will just charge you like a minimal amount to extend the lease of that land for another 50 years or another 70 years.
But it's that's the physical, it's the soil. It's the physical ground underneath your property. Am I correct?
Correct, yes.
It's very strange.
Yeah. It is, it is. It's kind of like you're leasing the land. But, you know, I just don't see any way that the government here are going to go, right, your 70 years is up, you're going to demolish your house and move. That's just not going to happen because, you know, you'd be talking of hundreds of millions of people. And like we have a lot of apartment blocks here, so you'll have, you know, maybe like half a square kilometer of land with 700 families living in a tower block. So, you know, I think that land then is owned by like a management company who, and I think the lease will just be renewed by the government for a minimal amount. That's the way I hear the Chinese talking about it.
But your physical house itself is your property.
Correct. Yes. Actually, they have a very similar thing in the UK. If you're in an apartment block, you don't actually own the land, because that's shared between all the people in the apartment block. So it's kind of similar, but they have a 100-year lease in the UK, and then you have to pay like a peppercorn lease at the end of that, something like that.
Ironically, though, with all of that in place, I've seen the data. China is way more capitalist than the US, ironically.
Yes and no. I think there's a... My personal opinion on the US, I think they got complacent. So I think if they moved to instead of investing in R&D, they moved to filling the shareholders' pockets. So you have these big corporations in America, and it's all about making as much to fill the sort of few large shareholders' pockets. Well, that's sort of different in China. They're very focused here on R&D. They invest a lot back into R&D. I wouldn't say it's more capitalist. There is a capitalist element.
Let's just get the terminology correctly defined. When I say capitalist, I mean the ability to trade. People think that everything is so centrally controlled that you can't trade unless you have the stamp of approval from the government. But you can pretty much trade anything you want in China.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, there's no limit on like what private businesses can do here. You know, it's just like any other. I'm familiar with the UK. It's just like the UK. You can set up a business. You can trade. You know. Many people do. Foreigners can come in. I know foreigners who've got businesses to trade. As long as you stick by the rules, you pay the taxes that need to be paid, you abide by all the rules. And I always say that, like, you know, there's things that sort of frustrate me a little here in China, like just different ways of doing things that I'm used to. Like, I find anything that's to do with tax and business here is a little more long-winded than in the UK, but that's just their way of doing things. And I feel it as a guest here, it's not my business to you know, change that. It's up to the Chinese people if they want to, you know. But from a point of view of business, it's very open here to trade, for sure.
But how do you find the tax, the sort of income tax system compared to the UK?
I think it's simpler. It's kind of similar. The taxes are lower here. It's slightly different for foreigners. I don't remember all the scales from my head. But again, just like in the UK, we get an accountant and they help you, you know, operate the most tax efficient as you can.
You said that you're a guest. Now, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I think it's a thing. I think it's a great thing that you're a guest. Europe is sitting with a mass immigration crisis. China is not. And that's because they are very homogenous in many ways, more than Europe, which means that they can conserve and preserve a very ancient culture. So I like that. I like that it's difficult for you
Me too, yeah.
I like that you have to, you can't really become a citizen. You can be a resident, as far as I understand.
Correct. You can, yeah. It's even quite difficult to get like a green card here. So that can be either done through if you have like if you're an expert in a field that China want. So if you're a professor in some area that China needs, you can get that green card. Or if you have some sort of special talent, or if you marry a Chinese citizen after a certain amount of time, you can go through the application process. Now, I think certainly from the UK, the reason they have a massive problem with illegal immigration is an illegal immigrant gets to the UK and all these sort of centres where they put them are full. So what they do, they now put them in a 3 or a 4-star hotel and they give them about $30 a day for food till their asylum case is heard. But that asylum case could take 3 or 4 years to come up. So these people who, let's say they've come from a country where they were earning $100 a month, right? They come to the UK, we put in a 3 or a 4-star hotel, it's very comfortable, and they're giving us $30 a day. Oh, plus we can get all our dental and our healthcare taken care of for free. So I would expect those people are like on the phone to their buddies saying, holy shit, man, it's bloody great here, come here. Whereas China's a whole different ballgame. You come here as a foreigner, if you don't earn your own money, the government don't give you anything. You know, you're on your own. And there was a case a number of years ago where they were having, in one city, Guangzhou, they were having some Africans who were coming in and overstaying their visas from like Nigeria and places like this. So the Chinese, when they arrested these people, they say, oh, we're not going to tell you where we're from, so you can't deport us. So the Chinese authorities said, it's no problem. They locked them up in a cell, a very small cell with 6 people in there. And they had a bowl of rice and a bottle of water a day. Very quickly, those Africans remembered where they come from. Oh, from Nigeria, please send me back. You know? So I think with the UK, it's the system that encourages immigration, you know. Whereas here, they're very open to people coming here, and if you can work here and you can earn your own living, fine. They don't have a problem with that, but they're not going to give you handouts and subsidize your living here for sure.
A bowl of rice a day. So if I was given dim sums a day, I think I would stay in that cell. I mean, that's probably one of the nicest dishes that you get is dim sums. Nice. Come on, you have to agree.
Yeah, dim sum is nice. Yeah, dim sum is a nice dish. I kind of eat a fusion between Western food and Chinese food. So there's some – actually, it's very difficult to define Chinese food because every province and even smaller areas within that province have their own cuisine. So it's just so varied. I've been coming here 20 years and I still go to some place and experience a new food or a new cuisine that I've never had before. So it's quite mind-blowing, really.
What do you find the people like? Very genuine, friendly. I mean, that's what I found.
I'm some of the friendliest people in the world.
Yeah, me too. I found that also. Let me compare that. I was in Amsterdam not too long ago, and everybody had headphones on, glued to their cell phone, and smoking weed, right? In Hong Kong, it's not the same. Yeah, very, very highly technological, but very, very friendly and very, very much about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't get over the hospitality of Chinese people. You know, I've I've met people who I've never seen before, and they you'll talk to them for a go, oh, come to dinner with me, and then they'll insist on paying for your dinner, you know, and like, I hardly know this guy, you know. And I've had numerous experiences like that, you know, people invite you into their homes. And like when I'm in the UK, I'm nervous to walk around with my camera in case somebody wants to give me a smack, you know. Mm. Never. In China, they're like fighting to get in the shot, you know. Oh, hi. Like they sit in there. You know, they're so friendly and hospitable here. It blows my mind. It really does. And I'm still shocked sometimes by how friendly people are.
So people listening to this are going to think that we are being paid by Chinese organizations because we're really making China sound great. Listen, let me just say off the bat, as an African, I love living where I live and I wouldn't want to leave. Despite all the warts of being in South Africa, I'll give you some examples. Sure. I'm a gun owner. I also go hunting. I know that that's a bit more complicated in China, and we have and we have some beautiful, beautiful game reserves and wildlife. That for me sort of keeps me. China doesn't really have that.
They have the wildlife. They have some nice areas with wildlife, but there's not hunting and stuff like that. Not at all. Yeah, you can't have a gun. And actually, the laws of like here, if you commit crime, the punishment is way more severe than it would be like in the UK. They really have a sort of no tolerance policy on drugs here. Even if I know of stories where people have gone to Thailand for a week and they've been smoking weed, and they come back and they get tested here and it's still in the system and they've been kicked out. And a number of years ago, I haven't heard this for a few years, but a number of years ago, they had a bit of a sort of drug problem in one of the cities. Actually, it was Africans who were selling the drugs to foreigners. Yeah, to foreigners, because they used to try and sell them to Chinese, and then they realized that the Chinese police went undercover and exposed them. So they would only offer it to foreigners, and they would raid a nightclub, and they wouldn't let anybody leave until they give a urine sample. And any foreigners that urine sample was positive, they'd be almost driven straight to the airport and deported and not allowed back for 5 or 10 years, something like that. So they have a really strict policy on drugs. And actually, if you're caught smuggling here and it's over a certain amount, it's the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. So there's another thing. I'm in two minds about that. I don't think the death penalty here on the African continent is a good idea because our governments are absolutely corrupt, inept, useless. Can you imagine how often they'll get it wrong? So I think it's better not to have the death penalty here in South Africa. However, we have a very, very high rate of crime. Now, this creates a very interesting dichotomy because China's got very low crime on average, doesn't it?
Correct, yes. And I think that's because the punishments are pretty severe, even for sort of fairly minor crime. Like if I compare the punishments here with the UK, they're much more severe here. Now, interestingly, my daughter's husband is a policeman, and he was saying that actually a lot of the crime is committed by the same small group of people, because when they bring them before the court in the UK, oh, we don't have room in the prison, we'll give you some community service. And then they just go back and commit crime again and again and again, because it's very hard to get locked up. Whereas here, even for fairly minor crimes, people will do a prison spell.
There's an interesting undercurrent there. Tell me if you agree, but it does also appear to me, Lee, that when there's more homogeneity, there's less crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. I mean, but I think it's also here to do with society, that
culture.
Like you mentioned earlier that people in the West are more about themselves. And that's not the case here. So like here, you will very rarely see vandalism because, like, people think, well, why should I destroy this? Then other people can't use it. You know, so you have parks here and like there's literally stores here. And this still blows my mind that there's nobody works in the store, right? So you scan a code with your phone and the door opens. Then you go into this convenience store, like a 7-Eleven, and there's cigarettes, there's drinks. You just pick your stuff up. You go to a self-checkout and pay. And then walk out, and there's nobody in the store. And I'm like, if that was in the UK, it'd be literally emptied in hours. You know, people would just rob it. But nobody does here. You know, okay, there's cameras in there. So if you did steal something, you would be, you know, you'll be found, you know. But I just, it still blows my mind that is a thing, you know, because nobody even thinks about it. I've left like my backpacking, I can go into a store here, like a coffee shop, and I can have my phone, my laptop, my backpack. Oh, I need the toilet. I'm off to the toilet. And I don't even think twice about leaving that stuff there because I know when I come back, nobody will have touched anything. And that's, I don't know of any other country you could do that in. Maybe Singapore, but I don't know anywhere else.
How do you find the language barrier?
I can speak a little bit of Chinese, but more and more young Chinese can speak English well. And actually, when they know I'm English, they want to practice their English with me. I would like to speak a little more Chinese because I'd like to speak to some of the older people sometimes who don't speak much English. But I just find it, for me, I'm not a language person, so I find it really difficult. Yeah, my son was here for 3 years, and he got to a fairly advanced intermediate level when he was here. But it's never really hindered what I do. Obviously, I'm married to a Chinese woman who speaks Chinese. But even when I'm out and about on my own, I always feel, you know, you can use body language, you can use a translation app on your phone. I've never got stuck. You know, I've always been able to, or sometimes I've been in a store and I'm trying to order something and I'm not getting it right. And somebody come, oh, I speak English, I can help you, you know, and they just step in and it's language barrier for me has not really been an issue.
I'm looking at the time, so I guess we should probably wrap up. But if I were to ask you for a nugget of wisdom, I mean, this is a very uplifting conversation, and I really do appreciate chatting to you about China.
That's because cool.
Because we're actually busting some myths, as it happens. But as a great soundbite, nugget of wisdom, what would you say?
I'd say, come to China, experience it yourself, and you'll go away with a very, very different view to you had before you come. Literally everybody I've spoke to who's visited here has gone away with a different perspective than they had before they came.
So what you're saying is if you can't go to China, then your next best bet is to trust CNN and The Guardian. And
not at all. Go to independent social media for sure. You know, that's where it's at.
Yeah, the BBC would never lie.
Actually, something interesting. The last couple of months, the BBC have actually done some 2 or 3 positive articles on China. It's like, whoa, what's going on? I had a friend here who actually caught the BBC out. They took a screenshot out of one of his videos. And when he saw it on the BBC's website, all the trees were grey. And then
I saw that.
Yeah, Jason Lightfoot. And when he raised it, they then changed the picture on their website to the original one. You know?
Speaking of the BBC, there was another very funny article. They were talking about some Chinese rocket launch, but the header image of the article was a surveillance camera on a street.
Oh my god. they love to put pictures of surveillance cameras. There are a lot of surveillance cameras here, but again, that is a factor that reduces the crime, because people here know if they commit a crime, there's a highly likelihood that they're going to appear on some video footage somewhere. So they think twice about committing. When I first came here 20 years ago, there was a lot of petty crime, pickpocketing, bag snatching. And that's all just totally disappeared, because now they have cameras. And actually, there's a lot of cameras here. So the Chinese value convenience over, let's say, their privacy. So, like, you go to a lot of metro stations here, they will have face recognition to get in. Where that freaks Westerners out. They think, oh, the government are keeping ours. They're not. It's just quicker to get people through onto the metro system. You know, scan your face. I don't use the face scan because it's harder to register for foreigners. But I just use my app on my phone. But a lot of Chinese will just use face scan, you know, to get into their apartments. But my wife, when we go shopping to a supermarket, she'll use face scan to pay for the grocery. It's just simple. But Westerners see it as that it's some sort of devious plot to monitor you, you know.
Have you seen that YouTube channel Serpent ZA?
I'm very aware of that guy. And actually, when he was in China, I used to watch his content, because his content was fairly balanced back in the early days when he was in China. And then I actually know the story behind this, because I was actually with the guy who knew him today. And the story behind it is they left China when he was here in China, like 20, 25 years ago. There was, let's call it white privilege in China. You were seen as a, you know, a bit superior to Chinese people. And that brought you, like, sort of, I don't know, a privilege of getting into places. And I think Serpent ZA liked that. That's all now stopped here. But he left China about 7 or 8 years ago. And he went to the States, and their idea, they were going to set up a channel to talk about refurbished cars. And that didn't take off. So I think they then like, oh, shit, how are we going to earn money? And they hooked onto the fact that being anti-China got them lots of views, made them lots of money, because they were swimming with the tide of public opinion at that time. That's kind of where he's at now. And he kind of recently, he made a video with Chris Chappell from China Uncensored, another anti-China. And they were kind of whining and crying that, oh, their views are going down. They're not getting as many views anymore. And I think it's because I actually feel in the last 6 months, there's starting to be a change from the Xiao Hongshu thing and the visa-free travel here, that the West sort of perception for a lot of people is starting to become more neutral on China. That's my feeling. I think you know, I think the Xiao Hongshu, the little red book thing, was a major event where a lot of Americans really had their eyes open to basically realizing they were being fed false information on China.
Lee, how can I follow you?
You can follow me by just going to my YouTube channel. The channel name is BarrettYT. Or you can follow me on X, where I'm a little bit more political, under Barrett YouTube.
As easy as that.
As easy as that.
On that note, Lee Barrett, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
If you enjoyed this, please visit germwarfare.com.